halfway through the show this Saturday morning, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, to be specific, on TSN 1290. Ezra Gisberg in studio with Richard Pollock. Drew Mandel is on vacation. This segment's brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
As we were talking about before the break, Denny Potvin, if you grew up in a hockey house like Ezzy and I did, you heard all about Denny Potvin and the dominant Islanders team. So we're pleased to be joined by Denny Potvin on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Denny, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing really well. Thank you, gentlemen.
And we wanted to ask you, before we get into Florida, Ottawa, the Islanders, all those things, we wanted to ask you, our buddy Stevie works with you in Florida. How good or bad, Denny, are the stats that he talks to you and sends you?
You know what? I couldn't hold my job if it weren't for the statistics that he provides me with every day.
We're going to cut that clip. We're going to play it on rotation later on. And
right.
You know, Denny, you, of course, I want to talk to you first about the New York Islanders and their final season on Long Island. They lose in Game 7 in a, you know, an exciting Game 7 to the Washington Capitals. What emotions did you have when you, when the final buzzer sounded and then the Islanders are going to be moving over to Brooklyn?
Well, you know what? I'll take you back a little further because, you know, unfortunately, the Islanders have had a long history of not doing very well, you know, after the great years we had in the 70s and the 80s. And we kind of lost touch. You know, you sort of, you know, you feel good about the organization, about what we did, and then you sort of, you know, lost track of the Islanders a little bit. So this season was really a rekindling of old emotions. The Islanders honored all of us who are in the Hall of Fame. My night happened to be November 29th during the season in Long Island. It was really great. And it was a lot of fun to see this team perform at a level that we're used to seeing the old Islanders perform. And I'm just a big fan of John, you know, Johnny Tavares. I think that he's a great leader for that team. And, you know, I hope that going to Brooklyn, although it's sad that a new building couldn't be built right in Uniondale, like right next to our old building, like many of the cities have done, you know, like Philadelphia and Boston and whatnot. That is the sad part. But overall, I think that, you know, it's going to be a move that hopefully works out for the New York Islanders. But they certainly garnered a lot of interest from me over the year.
Denny, were you surprised at how that series turned out, or was that what you were expecting? And did you think that the Islanders really missed, especially Travis Hamonic on the back end there?
Well, anytime you're losing three defensemen, you know, it's pretty tough. And so the numbers are down, particularly on the back line. You like to have nine or ten defensemen ready for playoffs, but that certainly wasn't the case for the Islanders. So that was a big problem. And, you know, listen, they're basically a team that has come together, you know, 6-7 months ago. I think the Washington Capitals have been a work in progress for some time. And as I said, you know, far back as last summer, when they finally got a coach that had experience, you knew this team was going to be good, and they're still going to be good. It's going to be an interesting series with the Caps and Rangers. But I give Barry Trotz a lot of credit. And unfortunately, the you know, New York Islanders, they didn't get any scoring from their defensemen, maybe partly because of the injuries or just the fact that the Capitals, I think, much more powerful team. And the other thing about the Islanders is the scoring balance is not quite there yet to be a championship team. I mean, I think Johnny Tavares was 20 or 25 points ahead of the second leading scorer on the Islanders. So that's not the balance of scoring you need to do well in the playoffs.
And Danny, you're from the Ottawa area and you covered the Senators for the past couple of years before returning to the Panthers to cover the Panthers. What did you make of the really incredible run that the Senators went on? Was that something that was something that you certainly didn't expect, or was there something there that some others that maybe were farther away from the team didn't see?
Oh, I couldn't have expected this. There's no way. But I was there a couple of years ago when, you remember, as you know, you accurately mentioned, I was working broadcasting the games with my my friend and superb broadcaster, Dean Brown. We were working the games in Ottawa. Dean's from Winnipeg, by the way.
That's right. We had him on a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, there you go. Good man. And so we had a lot of fun, particularly the year where, you may remember, you know, the terrible injury to Carlson with the Achilles heel that being cut by Matt Cook. And then later on, you had Spezza that was out of the lineup for a considerable amount of time, and McCulloch. And yet they went on to make the playoffs and beat the Montreal Canadiens. It was quite extraordinary. So I guess in one way, thinking back of that playoff series and that year where they did so well missing key players, maybe we shouldn't be surprised that they were able to rally. But, you know, you got to give Dave Cameron, the new coach, a ton of credit. He's a good man, great coach, and it was fun to watch them go. They were my pick, actually, to win the series. Maybe I picked with my heart more than I did my head.
You know, Denny, you mentioned Erik Karlsson, who's clearly one of the best defensemen in the NHL right now, Norris Trophy finalist this year, along with PK Subban. You know, you're known as being one of the greatest defensemen of all time. Watching the playoffs right now, after, you know, the first round and a couple games in the second round, what defenseman to you has stood out the most and impressed you the most so far in the playoffs? And maybe also a guy that on a yearly basis impresses you as a defenseman in the playoffs?
Well, you know what, obviously it's like everybody else, I'm usually impressed with, you know, Drew Doughty, and he was on the Stanley Cup winning team the last couple of years, and, you know, Duncan Keith. Those are the guys that are real solid, solid players that have it all. And I think that the one thing that Erik Karlsson has is that he has that ability to play, you know, obviously a natural offensive game, sort of a gifted offensive defenseman. And I think we saw this year, you know, in the stretch as well as in the playoffs against Montreal, you know, he can add a physical game. He's not a big man, but he's incredibly strong, and also plays a defensive game, you know, that is akin to the guys that didn't have to play physical but had great speed, good stick, good positioning. You know, so I put him in that category, absolutely, with Doughty and Duncan Keith in particular, who I think really bring just about everything you need from a defenseman to the game.
You know, Denny, we have you on, and Richie mentioned that now you're back to covering the Florida Panthers after covering the Ottawa Senators. We got to ask you about Aaron Ekblad, who was obviously the first overall pick, and it was just announced that he was nominated for the Calder Trophy. I don't think anyone would be surprised if he ends up winning the Calder Trophy. How impressed were you with the way he played this year as an 18-year-old?
You know, from the first interview I saw in training camp, there had to be a horde of reporters all around him. You know, South Florida is a pretty good hockey market. A lot of people have a lot of interest. They're waiting for the team to start winning consistently. A lot of sports going on there. So there's a lot of alternatives. You know, people are not going to put their money and go watch a team that never makes the playoffs. It's not exciting. Aaron Ekblad is going to be the guy that's going to make that change. I mean, this guy at 18 years old, and I'm not a fan of having a player play at 18 years old. We've seen too many stars, you know, here in South Florida. I mean, starting with, you know, Steven Weiss and Niedermeyer and Horton and Bollmeister and on, you know, playing players at 18 years old. I'm not so sure that they did the players any favors. But this guy's a little different. I mean, his attitude, we've talked about his maturity so much, but there are statistics that go along with how incredible a season he had. He played 81 games. The only one he missed was because of the flu. We had this long road trip. He played 81 games. He was the best defenseman on the Florida Panthers. He also had this statistic that whenever the Florida Panthers were behind, there's a stat now that accurately depicts who gets the most shot attempts on goal when your team is behind. Aaron Ekblad had that, hands down, was the best on the Florida Panthers. That, to me, is one of the greatest statistics because it gives you an idea who takes the bull by the horns when the team most needs it. And that was as an 18-year-old. So we're very anxious to see him progress, and I don't think there's going to be any hiccups in his career.
And, you know, Denny, you look at the back end there with Ekblad as a rock, and you look up front, and there's some nice young talent, Alexander Barkov, Nick Bjugstad, who signed the extension this year, and then Jonathan Huberdeau. What do you expect for those three players? What do you see about their games that make you, you know, you'd be encouraged if you were a Panthers fan?
You know, I was asked oftentimes what it takes for a team like the Florida Panthers to become a playoff team, and those three names come up all the time, obviously, and they should. And I said, you know, to be a guaranteed playoff team, to win, you know, north of 40 games every year, which is typically the amount of games you need to win to be in the playoffs, you need four or five guys on the team that can score 20 goals. You might get a guy that scores 30. You might even get a guy that scores 40 or 50, you know, if you're that lucky. But typically, you need four or five players who can score 20 goals, and you can count on those guys. So basically, you need guys that perform like, you know, Parise and, you know, Kamini year after year and score the same 26, 27 goals. I think the Florida Panthers have that. And those three guys are the three keys. They've got to be money. Ekblad is going to get himself in the teams, no doubt about that. He may have a 20-goal season ahead of him. He really gets the puck through that well. But the top three guys, Bjugstad, Barkov, as you talked about, and Huberdeau, in my estimation, those guys have got to be money. That's three 20-goal scorers guaranteed starting next year. That's why I think there's so much excitement watching the young Panthers develop.
Joined by Hall of Fame defenseman Danny Puff and Florida Panthers color commentator on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You know, Danny, Richie and I and Drew, Drew's not here right now, but we've talked about, you know, the lack of offense in the NHL this year. You know, you didn't see anybody crack the 100-point barrier. You cracked the 100-point barrier in 78-79. You actually scored 30 goals three times as a defenseman. You don't see that very often. When you're watching the playoffs and you see these low-scoring games, can you still appreciate these low-scoring games, or do you kind of miss that offensive aspect of the game and you'd like to see more goals?
Well, I'd certainly like to see more goals. There's a lot of the aspect of the game that has changed. But before I go on to that, let me just add Brandon Peary, who had an incredible run second half of the season for the Panthers in terms of one of the 20 goal scorers. So now maybe we're just looking for one more down in Florida. All right, so that being said, I woke up this morning and I thought about the game last night, and I taped the game, you know, the Minnesota-Chicago game, and there's a lot of excitement in the game, I think. But there's one thing that reminded me of my brother and I playing ball hockey with short little sticks in the basement. You guys probably do that still at home, you know, where the goaltender's on his knees and he shuffles around from post to post and everybody's whacking away at the puck and there doesn't seem to be a pass made or a good play made. Goals are scored on mistakes. There's no goals scored on good offensive plays. There's a little bit of that going on, particularly in this series with, you know, Montreal and Tampa, and, you know, I would rather see more creative hockey, but everybody's so afraid of turning the puck over. And, you know, now I call it the flat puck scenario that I think Detroit has been so good at over the years. Whenever you get into the offensive zone, just throw a soft puck towards the goaltender and have all of your forwards charge at the net and try and jam it in. And there's a little bit too much of that going on for my liking. But this is where the game has evolved. You're more interested in not making mistakes than you are in creating really good plays. And I just think the hockey sticks are so long now. I mean, we used to use 55 inches as a max, you know, from the heel to the top of the stick. Now they're using 70 inches and some longer, as long as you're over 6'5". So I think a lot of the passing lanes are gone. So the game has evolved into what we have. It reminds me a lot of when my brother Jean and I played hockey in the basement, short sticks and shuffling around on our knees.
That's really interesting to hear you talk about, Dan. You almost had a point a game. Basically, you had a point a game over the course of your career as a defenseman, which is incredible. I want to ask you a final question and let you go. I know you have a bunch to do today. The NHL draft is going to be in Florida, and obviously that's great for the city and for raising interest in the area, and the team's obviously on the up and up, as you mentioned. How excited is the organization to be hosting the draft, and do you have any idea where you think the Panthers will go with that first-round pick?
You know, I can answer both. I think that the draft will be exciting. We're going to have a lot of people there at the building. The Florida Panthers are honored to have it. It's always a great event, a well-followed event nationally, internationally, as you know. And, you know, so all of the young people are going to be coming down on South Florida for the draft. The Florida Panthers have the 11th pick, as you know. Didn't get a chance to move up in the lottery, but quite satisfied. When I left the building a few weeks ago, I just quickly talked with Dale Tallon, the general manager, and he said, look, he said, you know, their chances of winning the lottery was 3%. They weren't counting all that. But he says, look, we've got some real good players that we have marked that they can pick at 11. Now, Dale Tallon may find a way to move up in the draft a little bit. I'm not sure. But they're targeting some, you know, like everybody else, targeting some strong wingers. That's what the Florida Panthers will be looking for. You know, if they can get a top defenseman or something, always a good thing. But the Panthers are going to be looking for more strength. And obviously, what everybody's looking for, tremendous speed on the wing. So they're focusing on right wing and left wingers.
It's going to be a dangerous team once they get a big winger like that. Danny Potvin, Hall of Famer, Florida Panthers color commentator, thanks so much for joining us this Saturday morning.
My pleasure, man, and thank you.
Thank you. When we come back, that was great to talk to a Hall of Famer like that. I mean, that's just a thrill for both of us, for Ezzy and for me. When we come back, we're going to get back into the playoffs, but not in the way you may think. The Wings were beat in the first round by the Tampa Bay Lightning in an incredible Game 7. But did that mark the last game in Mike Babcock's career with the Detroit Red Wings? We will talk about that after the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Is it already just about 10:45 on Saturday morning? Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show having a blast.
Well, Chris is playing great music. I mean, we got to give him credit here. You know, I've said this before on the show. One of the best concerts I ever went to was White Stripes in Montreal. Great band. Jack White's, there's a documentary, I forget what it's called, about like guitarists. I forget the name of it. And he's in there, and Jimmy Page is in there. Great band. Jack White's a talented musician.
I saw Jack White with the Raconteurs at Lollapalooza in 05, which... No, 05, oh my God.
Yeah.
06. Not 10 years just yet. Don't want to scare myself. The segment's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. By the way, Rumors Comedy Club, Jim Brewer, going to be there.
Is he going to be half-baked?
That's one of the best movies. That's one of the best movies of our generation, right? Just so you know, Jim Brewer's at Rumors May 14th to May 16th. Give Rumors a call. Go to rumorscomedyclub.com. Pick up your tickets. I'm not sure if Mike Babcock will be at Rumors, but there's been a lot of rumors about Mike Babcock's coaching.
It's a good segue. You're not on a segue, but it was a good segue.
Channel my inner Ron McLean, which I don't have much of. I can say other people don't have much of, but we don't get into that conversation. Ezzy, Mike Babcock, what we first want to do is Babcock, Mike Babcock, the Wings lose to the Lightning, and that series could have gone either way. You know, the Wings don't blow that game in game four. Maybe the Wings have won. Maybe you get a couple bounces on Ben Bishop in game seven. Maybe the Wings beat the Tampa Bay Lightning. Mike Babcock's comments after the game are interesting, and we have the comments here. I want to play Mike Babcock's comments, and then I want to kind of break down what he had said and then where we think he may go and how it relates to the Detroit Red Wings.
Mike, just as far as your future, what's in the next few days for you?
Well, I'm not talking about that now. We'll talk about tonight's game. I think we'll have a team meeting and a final press conference. We'll be happy to talk about any of that crap then.
Is this a team just from the development you've seen from young players that you see going forward next year?
Yeah, I mean, we got lots of good young players, no question about it. And ideally, we got some good ones coming. But who's gonna replace Path? You know, and I don't think Path's going anywhere right away. But I mean, that's what you got to do in the end. You got to have big time players up the middle and on the back to be successful. So those are questions in our organization that we work towards. We've been drafting good and developing good, but we've been winning too much.
That's the Mike Babcock's contract's obviously up. Do you find yourself wondering?
Well, you hear you've been winning too much. I thought that was interesting, and you know, it's true in the sense that if you win a lot, you're going to have late draft picks. You're going to trade picks to try and win, and then you're not going to be able to restock the cupboard, and you have to rebuild, and somehow, really somehow, the Wings have not missed the playoffs in about 70 years, and they don't lose, and very rarely do teams draft as successfully as the Wings have, or even the Philadelphia Flyers. You know, Philadelphia Flyers in the lower half of the second round take Mike Richards and Jeff Carter, and they can't keep these guys, but Claude Giroux and Justin Williams, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, Simon Gagné, they took all five of those guys in the bottom half, I believe, of the first round, which is incredible. But it's hard to do that. It's hard to make the playoffs and continue to succeed, and I thought those comments kind of led me to believe that Mike Babcock, first off, we know he's thought about it a lot, but led me to believe that Mike Babcock may be looking at other places for coaching next season.
See, it's funny though, Richie. You know, I listened to that whole interview that was done by Helene St. James, who writes for the Detroit Free Press. Great writer, and she was asking the majority of the questions in that scrum there. And he goes on to say, Babcock, that is, he goes on to say, you know, everyone's going to read into everything I'm saying here. You know, he says that he hasn't really made a decision yet, and he was focused on the playoffs. And I believe him. I don't think, you know, down the stretch and all of that, it might be in the back of his mind, Richie, but he's not actively negotiating with Ken Holland, put it that way, right? So I think that right now Ken Holland is arguably the biggest coaching free agent of all time.
Mike Babcock, you mean?
Yes, sorry, Mike Babcock. That's what I meant to say. And right now, you know, could he command $4 million, $5 million a year?
I said during the season he's going to get five.
Well, his track record, I think he deserves it. I think he's got two Olympic golds. He's got a Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. Got two Stanley Cups, right?
One Stanley Cup. He's been to three finals.
Right. He's been to three finals. So one cup.
One with the Ducks and two with the Wings.
And they went to the final with the Wings and didn't win it. So, I mean, his track record speaks for itself. He's one of the best coaches. I mean, if he wants to be the coach in 2018 for Canada, the job is his. Mm-hmm. It really is. He's the best coach since Scotty Bowman. I think we can agree with that. And those are big shoes to fill when you're talking about Scotty Bowman with the Habs and the Red Wings. And so I look at it, and I don't know if he's staying or not. I look at it like, would Edmonton be a fit? Probably. He's from Saskatchewan. He said in the interview, even, you know, he still has a home outside of Saskatoon. It's not far away.
He's close with his family.
Does he want to go to Toronto? It's a heavy market. Does he want to go to
Toronto's hell?
Does he want to go to Philadelphia, a team that, even though they missed the playoffs, you know, they're a couple players away, I think, from being a contender. I mean, you still got Giroux and Voracek, and Couturier is a good player. To me, Mike, but you look at Mike Babcock and. Would he want to maybe stay in a position where he's got, he knows that he's got a lot of power. We know that he has influence on player personnel decisions to a certain degree with Ken Holland, right?
Well, probably not as much as he'd like, but I don't think Mike Ilitch wants any more. He wants Ken Holland calling the shots.
Right. And Ken Holland's done a pretty good job.
He's been an incredible job.
As you mentioned, this team has made the playoffs for 24 straight years.
That's unbelievable.
Which is incredible. And, you know, there always seems to be, you know, if it's not Gustav Nyquist or Thomas Tatar, it's Landon Ferraro or Luke Glendening.
Right.
All these players keep coming up through the system. And so, to me, I've thought about this a lot, especially over the last 3 or 4 months. I don't know if Babcock's going to leave. He has a pretty good situation here.
It sounds to me like you don't think he should leave, but do you think he will leave?
Both. I think both. That's what I meant. I think that he is probably thinking about it, and he's got this familiarity with Detroit. And Ken Holland has come out and said this. Money's not an object. I mean, if he wants $5 million a year, they'll pay
it. Well, hold on, Ezzy. I want to stop you there. I've heard that same comment. Ken Holland said money's not an object. And we're going to have Ted Kelfin of the Detroit News on next segment to break this down further. But if you're Ken Holland, you're making $2.5-3 million.
Oh, you're saying there might be a conflict with the coach making more?
I mean, it's like when George Costanza gives his assistant a raise. And then he's like, well, hold on a second. If I work above you and you're making more money than I am, this can't work. It's the same idea.
It's a good point. And, you know, Mike Babcock, as we've talked about, he would be the first coach that's cracked that $5 million. The coaches' salaries aren't published, by the way, but I think it's safe to say nobody else makes
I don't think anybody makes more than three. Yeah,
I think that's maybe Quenneville and Boudreaux, some of those higher-paid guys.
2.5 to 3, I think.
Yeah. So I think if he's making that much, that's also good for the other coaches. The other coaches are probably thinking, yeah, go ahead, make $5 million a year. That's good for us.
That's 100% true. And I think Mike Babcock sees it as a fraternity of being able to raise the bar. And the truth is, in cap systems, you see coaches and managers getting paid more money because that's where you can spend outside the cap, right? And NFL, it doesn't count against the cap if you pay Bill Belichick $10 million a year.
Right.
And I think the reality is that you look at all these teams and how similar they are. I think coaching is more important now than it's ever been. And I agree with Danny Potvin, and you had mentioned that it's boring. And I don't think for the game and for excitement levels, it's actually a good thing. But I think coaching now, because these teams are so similar, look at Paul Maurice here, how the team responded to the coach, how similar the roster was. It was different a bit, but how similar it was to the year before. Coaching makes a world of difference now, and I think that's where you spend your money because it doesn't count against the cap. So what do the Detroit Red Wings care, for example, or the Edmonton Oilers? Edmonton Oilers are making money. I think they're in the top 10 of money earned this year in the league. They had an awful team. They're getting a new building, going to make more money. So your Daryl Cates, $5 million is like a cup of coffee to you and me.
I think if Edmonton's able to land, well, first off, Edmonton, we could all agree that Edmonton's going to be desirable for a coach. As you said, they're getting a new arena, and they have the first overall pick, which they'll most likely use, on Connor McDavid. So if you're Mike Babcock, and you're a province over. I mean, again, this is all speculation.
I mean, Edmonton to Saskatoon is home. And how far? They're both north. How far is that? How far is that drive? It's probably less than 7 hours.
He's got some familiarity with, you know, coaching with Team Canada. Guys like Kevin Lowe. I mean, again, this is all speculation here about if he's going to go to Edmonton.
To me, Ezzy, I don't see how he can turn down Edmonton's job. If the money is there, Chiarelli is there, Bob Nicholson's there.
It's only if he doesn't want to stay in Detroit.
If he doesn't want to stay in Detroit, that's exactly it. If he doesn't want to stay in Detroit, and I think if he would have wanted to stay to Detroit, he would have stayed by now. I cannot see how he doesn't want to go to Edmonton. He talks about the middle. McDavid, Nugent Hopkins, Draisaitl, the end.
And again, what do you want with a young team? You want a veteran coach. You don't want a young coach with a young team.
I agree.
To me, Dallas Eakins, again, I think Dallas Eakins has got a bit of a tough rap. I mean,
because he was coaching,
struggled.
He had a mirror around him at all times, just making sure he looked good.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, I mean, the team wasn't very good, and I didn't expect them to make the playoffs. But to me, you know.
I mean, he did a terrible job.
I don't think he did an excellent job, but I think he didn't do as bad of a job as some people think he did. Maybe you're included in that.
He did a terrible job. You can't invent the game and then coach the game. You gotta be one or the other.
Yeah.
He think he could do both. Babcock's a better coach than him by about a country mile.
Well, Babcock's a better coach than I think any coach in the NHL. We've talked about this. I mean, I like Barry Trotz is a great coach. I think Joel Quenneville's a great coach. But yeah. Babcock's track record speaks for itself.
There was rumors this week that Quenneville might be out, which I think is crazy.
I don't know why he'd be out. I think he's done a great job.
Which is amazing. But there have been rumors for a while that he's not Stan Bowman's guy. That is a topic of conversation we're not going to get into. We're going to stay on the Babcock train. After the break, Ted Kofin of the Detroit News. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Alabella's got a seven seas head, but she's a modern lover. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go on this Saturday morning's Legal Curve Hockey Show, May 2nd, 2015. Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg in studio. Drew Mandel's on vacation, and we'll be on vacation next week as well when we do our show from the Hockey Manitoba 100th anniversary dinner at the Can-Add Inns. Hotel. It's going to be great. 3 to 6 next week. Special start time. Before we get to Ted Kofin of the Detroit News, this segment's brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat it in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Now, let's go live on the Legal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Well, this week marked the end of the Detroit Red Wings-Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, really good series. 7 games, went to a very, you know, close third period there. But the Red Wings lost, and Ted Kofin of the Detroit News is on here to join us, not only to talk about that series, but more so to talk about Mike Babcock's future. Ted, thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, guys. How are you doing today?
We're doing well. Ted, and we had, before you came on the segment prior, we discussed Mike Babcock and his comments after Game 7 and, you know, where he might go and how things are going to play out here. So his first question for you is, do you think that Mike Babcock has made a decision and when he was addressing the media after Game 7, or do you think he's still pondering his options?
No, the way he sounded yesterday, I really think he's still pondering, or at least that's the way he made it seem. He said he was adamant about the fact that he had not made any sort of decision whatsoever, and the process basically had just begun. So he had to take the man at his word, but I kind of believe him too. I mean, this is the guy that's probably really enthralled in the whole playoffs. He was trying to get the team into the playoffs, and then they had like an intense seven-game series against Tampa. I think the whole job thing was probably the last thing on his mind, and over these next 10 days and over these next few weeks, I think obviously it's going to be a lot more intense as far as that goes, and we'll see what develops. I think it's going to be a very interesting scenario here.
Ted, you know, you hear that Coach Mike Babcock wants more control over player personnel decisions, management decisions. As far as that goes, do you think, first off, do you subscribe to that, and do you think that's going to play into whether he decides to stay in Detroit or not?
You know what, guys? He insisted yesterday on a couple of occasions that that was not the case at all. He was adamant about the fact that he does not need that sort of control over personnel or whatnot. So, again, you have to take the man at his word. And he said that, you know, him and Ken Holland obviously have a great relationship. You know, it's been 10 years of success, basically. And Mike himself said that he doesn't have the skill set to be a general manager or any sort of, you know, player personnel guy. So he's a coach through and through. So, yeah, again, like I said, you have to take the man and his word. And if that's the case, then I think there's a pretty strong chance that he will come back to the Wings because it's a good setup for him in that regard.
Ted, I'm not sure how much money Ken Holland makes, but there is a kind of an idea out there, the thought out there that Mike Babcock wants to pave the way for coaches to get into the next level of income earners.
Right.
And so maybe it's $4 to $5 million, you know, at least in some circles you hear even numbers higher than that. Is it a problem, an issue, if the boss of the team, Ken Holland, is negotiating a contract that will see the coach of the team make more than him?
Didn't seem like it. I mean, Holland said on a couple of occasions yesterday during the locker cleanout that money would be no object. So I really don't think it would be. I think each of them is pretty secure in their, you know, in their positions. So, I mean, I don't think it's going to be an issue. And it sounds like, you know, whatever bid is out there, the Wings will be able to match it or even go above it. So, I mean, Mike Ilitch certainly has never been outbid on whatever he wants to bid on Miguel Cabrera or Justin Verlander or any of the hockey players. So you have to think that, you know, he'll match whatever's out there.
You know, Mike, you mentioned that, you know, talking about Mike Babcock, of course.
No problem.
You know,
you mentioned
that we have to take Mike at his word and what he says, and he hasn't made the decision yet. But how appealing is it going to be when Edmonton starts to call him, maybe asking him, you know, what he's thinking, or trying to woo him over to Edmonton, who, of course, have the first overall pick? And I guess, contrarily, how appealing is it for him to stay in Detroit, where he's got the familiarity? And this is a team, as we just talked about, they could easily be in the second round right now.
It is a tough choice. It really is. I mean, you figure, yeah, I agree with you. I think Edmonton is an interesting situation with McDavid coming into the fold, and there's still obviously some good pieces there that maybe he can keep or trade for, you know, for a little bit more depth on some other positions. But then you have the Red Wings, who he's been here for 10 years. He knows the situation well. I mean, there's been success. I think there's going to be success here in the future. It's a good, you know, the farm system's in pretty good shape. And, you know, still a basically young group here in the NHL level, and they've done well. So, yeah, everything we seem to gather, his wife loves the area here, so that's going to be a big factor. And he kind of joked about it on several occasions yesterday that, you know, he kind of hinted that his wife, you know, seems to be pushing for that part of it. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, he does. And then you still have places like Buffalo and Philadelphia, Toronto. Each of them has their certain intriguing aspect to it. So the man will have choices. There's no question about it. But I don't know. I guess if I were a betting man, I'd still say just the familiarity here and the fact that it does seem to be the most stable situation of all the choices. I still think there's like a, well, 52-53% chance that I think the Wings are probably in the lead.
Ted Kaufman, Detroit News, joining us to talk about Mike Babcock and, you know, what we see in the future for him. And, you know, Ted, you say 52-53%, so you're not overly confident, but if you had to bet on it, you would think Babcock would return. What about this perspective? I mean, if he wanted to stay, he knows the team. He knows Mike Ilitch. He knows Ken Holland.
Right.
Why wouldn't he have signed by now?
I'm sure all of us would love to be in that position. I mean, he's going to be wooed if he wants to be wooed. I mean, there's going to be people out there who are going to offer him an awful lot of money, so he might as well take the opportunity to just see exactly how much interest there is. And I wouldn't be shocked if there was a significant amount of interest, and maybe somebody will blow him out of the water with an incredible offer. I think that's entirely possible.
You know, Ted, we talked about this last segment, and Richie alluded to it earlier in the interview, but do you think Mike Babcock's going to ask for $5 million a year?
I mean, you hear all these numbers being floated around, guys. That's really going to be interesting. I mean, I don't see why not. I could definitely see a Toronto or a Philadelphia or maybe even an Edmonton that could go that high. I don't see why not. I mean, you have a coach here who's won 2 gold medals, a Stanley Cup, has a resume that's unbelievable. Why not? I think we're approaching those types of numbers, I think, in the NHL now.
I think we are, and I made the comment, you know, in one of our shows in the middle of the season, Ted, that if you went from the Detroit Red Wings to the Toronto Maple Leafs, you'd be akin from going to the from the New England Patriots to the Oakland Raiders.
That's a tough situation there. I mean, obviously, I mean, he knows Brendan Shanahan, and there's obviously the whole, just the whole Maple Leafs aura, but you really, the farm system's not exactly the deepest out there. The NHL rosters has a lot of question marks around it. I think that would be, out of all the teams that you hear about, I think that might be the least desirable, maybe, if you want to put it that way at this point. But it might be able to offer him the most money, so then you kind of wonder if that would be an appealing part of it for Babcock.
You know, there was a Detroit Red Wings team on the ice this year, and they just played a real close series. Ted, just to recap that series, and obviously that game four and how that turned out really probably was the turning point.
That might have been the turning point, yeah. Obviously. Yeah, I mean, you win that game, you're up 3-1, and, you know, if Tampa can win three in a row at that point, you tip your hat off to them. But, yeah, that was, I think when you look back on it, you got to close out that game. And then on the flip side, you're still up 3-2 because you play a great game five down there. You seem to take control of the series again, and then you can't win the last two games. So that was highly disappointing in that part of it. But good series, very entertaining series. And, you know, you wonder if that kind of made Tampa that much stronger, just the way they looked last night in Montreal. I mean, it looks like they're going to give the Canadians all they can handle in that series, too. So maybe that, in the long run, that may have helped Tampa Bay just going through a tough series like that.
Were you surprised, Ted, at how, because, you know, the Wings in the first few games, there were times where they were really getting outplayed and the puck was being controlled by Tampa. But they sure adjusted in the last five games. I mean, they were coin flips, if not in Detroit's favor. Were you surprised they were able to adjust that much?
That's what I was talking about with somebody the other day. If you just, with all the boxing in the news right now, I mean, if it was just a point system, you kind of give that series to the Red Wings. I think they were the better team over the seven-game series. But, yeah, the first two games, if you watch those first two games, you thought, oh, my God, it's going to be a five-game series for Tampa. But, no, it's like Babcock and some of the guys said, they did get stronger as the series went on. There's no question about that.
Ted, when you look at the goaltending, Peter Mrazek played a heck of a series against the Tampa Bay Lightning, and you've got Jimmy Howard, who's under contract for several more years. Is this a good thing or a bad thing, in your opinion, going forward?
No, the way they made it seem yesterday, it's true. It's a good thing. I mean, you got two goalies that, I mean, nowadays you almost kind of need two goalies, like two quarterbacks, I think.
Yep.
I mean, you're not going to trade Jimmy Howard. I mean, he's got 4 or 5 years left. I think it's 4 years left on his contract at about a little over $5 million a year. Nobody's going to take that contract. Mrazek played very well. He's going to be a really good goalie down the line, but I think there's still a learning curve there. So at least for the short term, I see no problem with the two of them coexisting. And, you know, I think you kind of... Mrazek's very inconsistent at this point. Jimmy Howard was an all-star. I mean, he did make the all-star team. You have to remember that. So at this point, I think it's a good situation to be in with those two on board.
Final question for you, Ted, and we'll let you go and enjoy your Saturday. Stephen Weiss kind of made comments in, I guess, the final day there in Detroit, closing out the season, that he'd be talking to Ken Holland and see what was what. People aren't sure about his future. Obviously, he was in the doghouse of Mike Babcock, and early in the season he wasn't even going to play, and then we had Ken Daniels on the show, and then he comes back, puts up a bunch of points, but then falls out of favor again. How do you see that situation resolving itself?
Yeah, he's been a disappointment, let's put it that way. I'm not sure how it's going to unfold here this summer, but he definitely has not been the player that they expected him to be. I mean, he had a nice little spurt there for a while. It seemed like maybe things were coming along, but then all of a sudden he just, a lot of the lineup wasn't effective at all. You know, they signed him to replace Valtteri Filppula, obviously, and he has not done so, that's for sure. Not getting any younger either, 32, 33, I think. Again, another contract that's kind of toxic. He got 3 years and about almost $15 million left on it. And we shall see, but he's going to, like you said yesterday, going to have to fight to earn his way into the lineup right now, because he's basically the odd man out.
Ted Kaufman, the Detroit News, thanks very much for joining us this Saturday morning on the Legal Curve Hockey Show.
I enjoyed it, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much, Ted. When we come back, the Lightning just beat the Wings. They played the Habs last night in a double OT thriller. We're going to break that down, break down that whole series next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Well, 11:15 on this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg joining you in studio. Drew Mandel is on holiday for this week and next week's show. A note, shows now, springtime hours, 9 to 12 in the morning for May and June, except, of course, always an exception. Next Saturday, 3 to 6 live from the Hockey Manitoba 100th Anniversary Dinner at the Canad Inns Hotel. This segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting, custom-made mouthguard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
Tampa Bay Lightning, Montreal Canadiens.
This series is an interesting series because you have the Tampa Bay Lightning coming in having completely annihilated the Montreal Canadiens in all five games they played during the regular season. Then you have last night's game where you have the Habs and the Lightning going to double overtime, maybe a missed offside call, some tremendous goaltending by both sides. But before we get into breaking down last night's game and breaking down the performance of the Lightning against the Red Wings, I need you to hear, Ezzy and I need you to hear, what it's like listening to the Tampa Bay Lightning broadcast, specifically listening to a broadcast that features Phil Esposito. Here we go.
Goes, breaks his stick, and he passes to Callahan left corner. Around the far side, Patchy ready. Dangerous here, shorthanded.
Uh-oh,
to center, two on one. 2-on-1 across the block. Bocanic right circle back for Patchy ready, back for Bocanic.
What a save!
Oh, an incredible stop! No rebound! Claude right point. Short feet, Schuster right circle. Centers it. It's going to ricochet to Carl left circle. Fire score!
Johnson!
1-0 Lightning! 1:17:26 left to go. Bishop zips it up the middle. Johnson taps to Kucherov. Maybe a 2-on-1 across the blue line right circle. Kucherov holds! Shoots!
What a save by Price!
What the glove! Incredible stop. Zubin. Nice lead feed. Max Patcher ready up the middle and center. Accelerates across the blue line left circle. Shoots! Saved by Bishop! Score! In and out of his glove. In here. We're tied at 1 with 5:13 left. Couple of wins the draw from David Desharnais. Palat will chip it out to center. Petrie lost it. Kucherov, maybe a breakaway. Save by Price. Score!
It's in. It's in.
Score!
No goal.
They're going to take a look at it. If it was not in the stick kicking motion, it will count.
Beautiful play. The goaltender got pushed into the net. Therefore, there's no goal.
That's what I told you, David.
What I tell you,
the same thing as last year. He coming in, he stopped.
Gary Frank, he pushed into the net. He put the puck in himself. Boyle on the rebound in the left corner. Brian Boyle is going to be stripped by Patterin. Patterin loses Phil for the left circle. Nice feed to Kucherov in the slot.
He did it anyway.
The Lightning win it.
Okay, so if you want Brian Munns and Shane Natty to get on the air, the show... We need to be homers like that. Now, I got to tell you, that listening to Phil Esposito call game, as Chris just mentioned off air, Chris doing tremendous job, by the way, Chris Curry, it's like listening to wrestling. It's like Jim Ross and it was Vince McMahon before he, I mean, you're the more wrestling expert than I am, Ezzy, but.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, yeah, Jim Ross, or you got Michael Cole now, you've got the King, Jerry Lawler.
That's right, Jerry Lawler.
Right? But no, Espo's the best. I mean, we all
How amazing is that? I told you that was going to happen.
One of the greatest goal scorers of all time. Great call there. I mean, that game was really exciting. Yeah, going to double OT there. And the Tampa Bay Lightning right now, Ben Bishop is playing really well. Carey Price is obviously had an amazing season. But Ben Bishop kept them in the game, Richie. The Habs,
especially in the first period.
Especially in the first period. The Habs were outplaying the Lightning. And, you know, Ben Bishop is playing at a very high level right now. And that goal that Pacioretty scored, he wanted back. It was a terrible goal. First round? It was game 3 or 4 where Bishop put it in his own net. I forget which game it was.
I think it was game 3.
Aside from those couple of goals, he's been really good. And that series, you know, again, the Lightning, huge win for them in game 1. And This is going to be a really good series. Like, the first game goes to double OT. It doesn't get any better than that.
It doesn't. As Ian Carey Price makes the game look easy, and Kucherov's goal called off, as you heard there, and he scores anyway in double overtime. Although we're watching on the TV in studio, and it looks like there was an offside play on that rush. So, you know, complaints on both sides. The Habs have to be able to score, though, as if they're going to beat Tampa. Tampa Bay has too much firepower, and as you said off air earlier, you know, between breaks, and people know this, you can't rely on Carey Price that much. I mean, at some point, you have to put a few goals on the board.
Yeah, and the advanced stats crowd has really been hard on the Montreal Canadiens this year because their stats, the possession stats, haven't been good. And, you know, if you're someone who really subscribes to that, then why bother even playing the games, right? Because the Lightning are going to win the series. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I think the Montreal Canadiens, the power play has definitely been a problem. The power play hasn't been good during, it wasn't good in the regular season. For a team that has all of this firepower, PK Subban, Markov, Max Pacioretty, I mean, there's a lot of talent. Galchenyuk, Gallagher is good in front of the net. This team isn't scoring enough, as you mentioned. And again, playoffs, especially, when you're talking about these two teams, they could score goals.
Yeah.
But it ultimately comes down to it's a game of inches and mistakes. And, you know, when everything is so tight, you need these game breakers. And I think PK Subban had a pretty good game in game one. Didn't get on the board, but I thought there was more to be desired from players like Alex Galchenyuk, who wasn't very particularly good in the first round either against Ottawa. And, you know, Pacioretty was excellent. The move that he put
on Strahlman,
who I think Strahlman and Hedman have been excellent together as a pairing all year. But that move that he put on Strahlman, I mean, that was shorthanded, Richie.
That
was shorthanded that he did that. To have the confidence to do that. I thought Pacioretty was excellent. But again, the team isn't just Pacioretty and Carey Price. I mean, they need players to step up. They really do.
You mentioned the power play. Interesting to see. Basically, the first time they really switched it up significantly with the defenseman, right? Because all season they had Markov and Subban on the top pairing on defense on the power play. And yesterday they had Jeff Petrie out there with Subban. Now that creates problems on the two right-handed shots, but they wanted to change it up a bit because they were having no success. An interesting point during the broadcast last night, and by the way, you mentioned Pacioretty, going to the net, I think, is important for him putting the puck on.
He
had a good game yesterday.
I thought Kucherov was excellent, obviously. Kucherov is Tyler Johnson has seven goals.
Been amazing.
He's been amazing that whole line, but Andre Palat and Kucherov, I mean, those guys are a big part of this line. But to me, Pacioretty was the best player on the ice.
He was great. Stamkos, no goals. Eight games.
Stamkos, I thought, shot a little bit more. He had three assists in the first round.
He was not good in the first round.
Didn't score a goal. He still hasn't scored a goal dating back to before last year. He didn't score any goals last year.
He broke his leg. He was back for that, but hurt.
Yeah, he was back. Right. Yeah. But he struggled. To me, that line, Ryan Callahan and Alex Killorn have been good too, but that's ultimately going to be what the series comes down to, because right now you have, they call it the triplets line. There with Kucherov, Palat, and Tyler Johnson. It's one of the best lines in hockey right now. And, they're producing, but, are we going to see this series, again, kind of similar to the Rangers and Washington series, are we going to see all these games kind of come down to 2-1 scores? I wouldn't be surprised if we did.
The way the Lightning have, you're probably right, Ezzie, because with the goaltending, I think Price is better than Bishop, but Bishop's looked real two games, especially Game 7 in Detroit series and Game 1, in this series. Interesting point in the broadcast last night. I want to get your take on it. The Montreal Canadiens have a lot of small forwards, and Bishop is so tall that the screens in front are almost negated by the fact that he can look over. Like yesterday, Gallagher...
Unless you're Tyler Myers, you're not screening him.
Yeah, so Gallagher's quote-unquote screening the goaltender going in front of the net. Bishop has a clear path. That's interesting to me.
I think how much I like Gallagher. He's a great player, and I think he's played well. He's had chances. He hasn't produced maybe as much in the playoffs, but he's had his chances. But to me, those players, the key guys are Gallagher and Galchenyuk, to me. Because those players at times can be very effective, but Galchenyuk is a little bigger, but he's not the most physical forward. They need to get to the net. I mean, that is the key. You got it. That's where you go. You go to the slot to get your goals. And Pacioretty obviously has been doing that. And Galchenyuk's trying to go to the net. Bishop's, he's a big goalie. When you're shooting on Bishop, you don't see a lot of the net. He plays big and is big. And I think in game one, the Habs didn't do enough of that in their home rink. And that's going to be something that you got to think Michel Therrien is going to be talking about leading up to game two in Montreal. So I think the Habs, I wouldn't be surprised if they split these two games. This is going to be a long series. I don't think the Lightning are going to be able to dispose of Montreal quickly. It's still a solid team. Carey Price is still You watch Carey Price play, and he makes every save look easy. And the goal that Tyler Johnson scored, Richie, was a beautiful tip.
Beautiful tip.
It wasn't Carey Price. I mean, no goalie stopping that. Tyler Johnson got his stick on the shot. I think it was Strawman that had the point shot.
And so it's going to
be a very tight series.
You know, one other thing I want to note is, I think the Tampa Bay Lightning here are getting great matchups in their first two rounds. Because I think they would have trouble with a physical team when they're playing Detroit and Montreal, who don't hit much. I know Montreal's trying to hit yesterday because they haven't played so many games. But these matchups are just perfect for the Lightning. I think the Rangers are better 1 through 18 than the Bolts, but it's darn close. But I think the Washington Capitals would give them the most trouble because of how physical they are.
Right, and you look at what John Cooper's done with the Lions. He had Brian Boyle on the fourth line there, and he moved him up to play with Valtteri Filppula. I mean, so these are some good players they have in the bottom six. And, you know, even a guy like Brendan Morrow, this might be his last run into Stanley
Cup.
He's effective. You watch Brendan Morrow, and he's still mixing it up there in front of the net. And, you know, he's not as effective as he once was with the Dallas Stars. But this team, they've got depth. And, you know, even though Matt Carl and Andre Schuster, I thought they were a little shaky. That pairing I didn't really like.
He mixes it up a bit, too.
But Jason Garrison and Braden Coburn, I think they've done a nice job as the second pair. That's a big pair. They can move the puck. And Braden Coburn got that big goal against Detroit. So this Lightning team, it's a solid team. But again, I mean, you got to get more secondary scoring from Montreal. Pacioretty can't do it all.
We have, in our predictions, which we exchange via text, I picked the Bolts in six, and you picked the Bolts in a percentage mark. And then I had to ask you again what the heck that meant.
That was a typo. I think I picked six,
you
right?
You had Bolts in six as well.
I kind of regret. I kind of want to pick them in seven.
Don't change the first.
We'll go six.
Yeah, your first pick.
And again,
Drew had them in four. I regret the Habs in four, right?
Yeah. Well, Rich, I regret that I don't have a Canadian team going to the second round. Oh. I think Montreal, the Ottawa series took a lot out of them, and I think they're not scoring enough right now for me to be convinced that they can beat the Lightning.
When we come back, the Brandon Wheat Kings are going to the WHL final. Who they will play, we're not sure yet, but we're going to talk to Bruce Luepke about the Wheat Kings dispatching the Calgary Hitmen in the conference final last night. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Saturday morning, May 2nd, 2015. Only half an hour left in the show. It's flown by. Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg in studio. Drew Mandel is on holidays. And the last time we saw Bruce Luepke in person was at the MSSA dinner. As he was there. As you weren't there.
No, I wasn't there.
Yeah, that's 2 years in a row, right?
Wasn't feeling well.
You weren't feeling well, that's right. But Bruce Luepke was inducted into the Manitoba Media Roll of Honor. Rightfully so. We have him on to talk about the Brandon Wheat Kings.
Now, let's go live on the Legal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Well, Bruce, we weren't sure if we're going to be able to have you on today because it depended very much on if the Wheat Kings were able to take care of business last night, and they certainly did. Can you talk about last night's game? And it was a pretty impressive victory.
Well, an 8-2 win for a series-clinching victory over Calgary in the WHL's Eastern Conference Final. It was a game that Brandon trailed 1-0 after the first period, first time they had gone into an intermission trailing in the series, and responded quite well with 5 second period goals. Five came in a span of 6 minutes and 48 seconds, so they did it in a rush to kind of turn the game into their favor, and obviously went on to the win last night and an opportunity to play in the Western Hockey League Championship Series moving forward. They'll host the opening two games next Friday and Saturday, May 8th and 9th.
You know, Bruce, you were tweeting about this yesterday. I caught a little bit of the game, and I was reading your tweets as well. I went out Saturday night to do my Friday night, I should say. Maybe I went out too late. but, you were tweeting about how this team scores bunches goals in bunches, pardon me, and you mentioned the second period goals. Of all your years covering the team, have you ever seen a group that scores like this in bunches? Because the Wheat Kings were down 1-0 to the Hitmen after one.
Yeah, they seem like they've had those runs where they've scored goals in clusters for sure. I think it has to do with the fact that they are a pretty talented group, and they have been pretty offensive for much of the season. I made the comment during the game last night that at one point during the game they scored their 400th goal of the year, which is 340 in the regular season, and now I think they got 65 in the playoffs so far. So they can certainly score goals. It's without a doubt the 340 they scored in the regular season was most for a Western Hockey League team in 17 years or something like that.
Wow.
So they definitely have a lot of talent, and I think their opponents, when they play against other teams, and even you kind of just saw it a little bit last night where, Calgary was up 1-0, they get the tying goal, and all of a sudden, you have your opponent just, a little bit flustered maybe or a little bit surprised, and you have an opportunity to take advantage of that, and they seem to be very good of maybe seeing that they're a little bit flustered and taking advantage and maybe piling on a little bit in that sense. And I think that's a little bit about what happened last night, was they just got Calgary a little flustered in that time span and were able to take advantage of it.
Bruce, you have the two OT games against Calgary, but in the other three games, the Wheat Kings are able to outscore the Hitmen by 16 goals. I mean, I know the games were close to maybe yesterday after the first period, but that's pretty dominant performance in any hockey league. How impressed were you at how, maybe not easily, but how they were able to win by that such margins?
Well, it's interesting because the two games that were tight and decided in overtime, Calgary's goaltending was really good both of those games. Game 2 here in Brandon, Game 3 in Calgary. Brendan Burke played both and played extremely well in both. But one of the things that I think Brandon was aware of going into that series is that Calgary's goaltending could run a little hot and cold. And certainly, I mean, there's a lot more components to it than goaltending, but I think that's a little bit what happened is, you end up with a bit of a hot goaltender in those two games, but a bit of a cold goaltender the other three games. And when your goaltending isn't up to par in the playoffs, it certainly can lead to some lopsided scores. And I think that's what happened the other three games. I just think that there was a little bit probably below average goaltending on behalf of the Hitmen. And obviously when you're playing a pretty talented team like Brandon, that's not going to cut it a lot of nights.
Bruce, you talk about the winning by a large margin and the goaltending issues. Jake Virtanen at the end of game one had a head hit against Wheat Kings center Tanner Kaspik. So I wanted to ask you, to guess, two-part question: what did you think of the hit, and how is Kaspik doing?
Well, I thought it was exactly what you called it, a hit to the head. I think it was, it was an open ice in the neutral zone. It was one of the ones where I think in that juncture of the game was probably unnecessary. It was already kind of a runaway game at that point, and maybe you are trying to spark your team or set a tone for the next game, what have you. But, I didn't agree with the fact that they called it a minor at the time. And I felt it was deserving of a major, and obviously they had to review it at the league office and agreed with that assessment with the three-game suspension that he got. So, I think it's one of those situations where, Kaspik was obviously injured on the play, and anytime that happens, you have to, at least consider a suspension. As far as Kaspik is concerned, he skated at the end of practice on Thursday and took part in the optional game day skate yesterday. So my assessment from those observations means he's probably pretty close to being able to return to the lineup. Wouldn't surprise me if he played Friday when they start the league final.
Bruce, as you know, Kelowna's up 3-2 right now on the Portland Winterhawks, and yep. Jets fans are following that series as well, in addition to the Wheat Kings, because you got Josh Morrissey on the Kelowna Rockets, and then you got Nick Petan on the Portland Winterhawks. As far as the Wheat Kings go, is there a team that they'd prefer to play in the WHL Finals, and which team, I guess, do you think is a better matchup for the Wheaties?
And Chase Delio too for Portland,
yep,
as well. So
yep.
Another Jets draft pick. So yeah, there's definitely some interest out there. Nick Petan, by the way, guys, if you didn't know, tied a WHL record last night with his 87th career playoff game. So he's going to set a record on Sunday, provided he plays, which I can't imagine he won't. It's an interesting series because I think right from really the start of the season, and certainly since they acquired Josh Morrissey and then Leon Draisaitl in January, that Kelowna is the obvious favorite in the Western Conference. But the one thing, the old Ric Flair line, to be the best, you got to beat the best. Well, Portland's been to the league final for four consecutive years. So in order to get to the league final, Kelowna, it's only fitting that they should have to try and knock off the Portland Winterhawks. Portland, I don't think is as strong as in past years. I think their forward group is still pretty good with Patan and Oliver Bjorkstrand and Delio and some of those guys. Bittner is going to be a high draft pick, I think, this year in the NHL draft. But their defense core probably isn't quite where it's been the last couple of years. They've lost some pretty good players on the back end here over the course of the last couple of seasons. So I can certainly see Kelowna coming out of that that series myself. As far as Brandon's concerned, I don't think they care which team is here on Friday night. They just know that they want to beat them.
Joined by Bruce Lupke, voice of the Brandon Wheat Kings. And Brandon Wheat Kings, I mean, just an incredible year. They're heading to the finals of the WHL. Bruce, some fans of Winnipeg don't know a ton about some of the players on the Wheat Kings. And you look through the roster, and there are certainly some names of significance, you know, draft picks or whatever it may be. Ivan Provorov is a guy who's garnered a lot of attention for this upcoming year's draft. How impressive of a player has he been? And, you know, what do you foresee for him in the future?
Well, he's come in and fit in almost from the day he arrived here for training camp. He's, I guess everything you'd look for in a defenseman, except for the fact that he's only 6 feet tall instead of being 6'2 or 6'3 like most NHL teams would covet for a big time defenseman. But yeah, he I think without a doubt is going to be a top 10 pick in the NHL draft. A lot of people and scouts I talk to now here late in the year feel that he has a chance to jump in and play in the National Hockey League next year. So we'll have to kind of wait and see on that. And obviously that situation might depend on who ends up selecting him in the draft. He's just one of those guys. I think he does everything well. He skates with the puck really well. Sometimes can break it out of his own end by himself just by maneuvering up ice. Really good first pass, which is what you look for, obviously, in a defenseman coming out of your own end. Plays the point really well. There was a bit of a knock on him about not having maybe the most powerful shot, but the one thing I really think is that when he shoots it from the point, he does so kind of with a purpose. So it's not necessarily that he wants to get a lot of oomph on it. He wants to make sure that he gets it through the shooting lane and on net and those kind of things. And sometimes it's just as simple as a snapshot or a wrist shot rather than the big shot. So I think it's one of those things that he still does pretty well, but he just maybe has been a little bit underrated. But I just think he's a complete package. And you know what, guys, I just think if you were probably a couple inches taller, you might be hearing him in the same conversation, not necessarily with McDavid and Eichel, but certainly with that next group of players.
Yeah, and I think he's been ranked as high as top 10 by Craig Button. You know, Bruce, I remember last time we had you on, we were talking about Nolan Patrick and 16-year-old nephew of James Patrick. When you consider that he's not draft eligible till 2017, yeah, and you might have Provorov and Ryan Pilon, another guy who's supposed to go in the first round, when you consider that these guys are still going to be around next year, is it scary to think of how good the Wheat Kings are going to be? Not only, well, they're obviously going to the WHL finals this year, but how good this team's going to be for the years to come?
Well, I think that's, it's interesting. I think going into this season, everybody thought this was going to be another year of growth, and then next year was the year where they were going to be the team to kind of beat in the Western Hockey League, and they certainly have moved that timetable forward this year with the development of some of their younger players. And I think Provorov came in and maybe exceeded expectations in a lot of ways, and even getting him in the import draft was maybe a bit of an upset considering he was the 30th pick of the draft. So I think their timetable got moved forward to this year. I think there's an opportunity here for a couple more years with this group of players to continue to grow and to continue to be a pretty good team in the WHL. And of course, the other thing that you have to remember is next season they're going to add the number one pick from last year's Bantam draft, Stelio Mateos, to their lineup on a full-time basis. So that's not going to be a bad thing either. So, lots of good things to talk about for this season, but I think a lot of good things to come for future years as well, for sure.
You know, Bruce, you've been covering the team on CKLQ for since 93, so for 22 or so years, and sports director there as well. You mentioned how many goals they've scored. How exciting has it been for you from a personal perspective to cover not only a team that's been successful, but been successful in a style of play that's, aesthetically pleasing?
Well, it's I think it's one of those things You know, Kelly McCrimmon as a head coach, I think when he has been the head coach of the Wheat Kings, of course, had that the stint in the 2000s from, you know, 2004 to 2010 and now back behind the bench. His style of play that he wants to play has always kind of been this high tempo puck possession style of play, and they've always had pretty good teams as far as putting the puck in the net, even when they haven't necessarily had those top end offensive guys. But I mean, you go all the way back to the Eric Fair, Ryan Stone era in those ways, or in the Memorial Cup host year in 2010 with Braden Schenn, Matt Calvert, Scott Glennie, those guys. There's always been that sense of a team that was gonna score. It was always about how much are they going to be able to keep the puck out of their own net. I think has always been something that's been a concern when you play that style of play. Well, this year they've gotten that solved a little bit, and part of that has been, one, we've got a pretty good goaltender by the name of Jordan Paperny, who's got the best stats as far as goals against and save percentage in the playoffs this year, and has really matured and become one of the elite goaltenders, I think, in the Western Hockey League. And two, their defense core is really solid from 1 to 6. You talk about Provorov and Pilon, but Eric Roy and Colton Waltz and Erkamps and Reed Gal on the back end, they're all veteran guys, and I think that has really helped on the back end to allow them to get their goals against down to the point where even though they can still score a lot, they don't necessarily have to win those 5-quarter games. And just as an example of that, we've played, 15 games in the playoffs now, and half of them have been 3-2 games, and won the majority of those for sure. So I think they've got that ability now to play both styles of play, where they can obviously outgun a team, and they can also play strong defensively and win those 3-2, 2-1 type of games as well.
Recipe for success. Final start Friday, May 8th at Westman Communications Group Place, and tickets go on sale Monday morning. Bruce Lubke, Brandon Wheatking's voice on CKLQ, thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks a lot, Bruce.
Good luck in the finals. It should be a great one. And fans, I mentioned Monday morning tickets. You can drive out to Brandon if you're in Winnipeg.
These games are all sold out. And
still tickets on Monday.
They have been sellout. And I know I've watched a game there before, several games there before at Westman, and this is awesome. I mean, it's great. We only have one team from Manitoba in the WHL, so it's awesome to see. This is a good team. I think I'm going to go out and say that they win the Memorial Cup this year.
Wow.
I think this team is that good. I mean, I know there's some other good teams out there. The Erie Otters are still around. OHL there, but
who's on the Erie Otters?
I have no idea. Yeah. Dylan Strome.
Oh, yeah, Dylan Strome. I hear he's pretty good. His brother's pretty good, apparently, too. When we come back, last segment, Hawks and Wild and our picks. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Final segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Saturday, May 2nd, 2015. Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg in studio. Chris Curry done a bang-up job.
Drew who?
Exactly, Drew who. What song? This is interesting. What song?
This is A Lonely Night in the Park by Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, there you go.
Saw a little bit of a B-side.
Hold on, is this
when you might not hear very often?
You knew Bruce. I love that you knew Bruce, and I was like, "Lonely Night in the Park." Yes.
Two things, Chris. You're gonna steal Richie's heart if you keep playing those Bruce Springsteen songs.
Well,
by the
segment.
Way, are you playing the song because you're trying to pick a song that goes with what I did last night? I didn't want to admit it, but
I didn't want to say it.
That
on
was
air
that
either,
was what I did last night. A lonely night in the park. just having a nice little glass of wine
in the park.
Yeah.
Is that allowed?
Listening to Bruce Lubke call the Wheat Kings game.
While you listen to Bruce Springsteen in Lonely Night in the Park in the background. The show is brought to you by Frank Zappia, Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, the official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Or via phone at 204-772-2100.
In all seriousness, though, big thanks to Bruce Lubke for coming on. We've had him on a bunch of times here. And, I'm a WHL guy. I think I was kind of raised being a fan more so of the WHL brand of hockey. And, you know, Richie, you mentioned, you know, in this series, there was tons of goals. The Hitmen, Wheat Kings series, that is. Love that, to see that. And you know, I don't know if you'll see that many goals if the Wheat Kings end up playing the Kelowna Rockets or the Portland Winterhawks. But, I mean, this team, and as we mentioned, Nolan Patrick, they're talking about him being a top three pick in 2017. He's that good.
Mateos was the first overall pick in the WHL draft, right?
Yep.
Last year.
Yeah, WHL is the only league where they have the 15-year-old Bantam draft. Right? So, I mean, it's the future looks bright there. You know, hats off to Kelly McCrimmon.
Yes.
He always does a great job.
He does a great job. You're absolutely right. He's done a great job in the community. He's such a big part of that community because these WHL teams, and like the Jets are here, are such a big part of the community that they're a part of. We got one
Chicago
last.
Chicago Blackhawks, Minnesota Wild.
I was going to say, we got one last series to break down and our picks.
We're going to drop the gloves.
As he picks Michael Buffer to win the fight tonight. Wild and Hawks, and they get off to quite a interesting start last night. Hawks get off to a great start. Wild comes storming back, and the Hawks get the big goal at the big time like they have so far in the playoffs. Ezzy, what do you think?
Well, first off, Zach Parise is playing the best. I've seen Zach Parise. Yeah. Sorry, I got to call him Parise, not Parise. He looks amazing right now, and he hasn't looked this good to me since the Devils went to the Stanley Cup Finals against the LA Kings back in 2012. I mean, he was excellent during that run. So was Kovalchuk, was good too, and other players. But this Minnesota Wild team, I mean, they don't give up. Let's be honest here, Richie. Devan Dubnyk has had a great season. He was awful yesterday. I mean, he just wasn't good. I mean, we haven't seen Devan Dubnyk give up four goals like that in a really long time. He might have only done that once or twice since coming over to Minnesota. He wasn't very good. But this Hawks team, I mean, with Patrick Kane, and again, you see the depth, Patrick Sharp on the third line, Teuvo Teravainen, who wasn't that good in the first round, actually was a healthy scratch for parts of that round one. I think three of the three games in the first round, you know, he gets that goal, that huge goal late in the second period, and that totally, I thought, killed the momentum that the Minnesota Wild had. So, I mean, this series is going to be fantastic. You talk about goals, Richie. I think we're going to see a lot more goals in this series, and especially we're going to see in the Eastern Conference, because you've got Corey Crawford, who's not playing his A game right now, and you've got Devan Dubnyk, who, again, he struggled a little bit in the playoffs, too.
What do you think that winning goal?
Well, it was weak.
He had a lot of those on that glove side, eh?
Yeah, and he's the reason why the Minnesota Wild, well, a huge reason why
is,
the Minnesota
yeah.
Wild, other players are obviously contributing to that. But, you know, the first goal, Brandon Saad, he made Ryan Suter look like a pylon. I mean, Ryan Suter is one of the top defensemen in the NHL, and I think Brandon Saad is one of those guys that after Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews and Marian Hossa, you forget about how good Brandon Saad is, a late pick of the Chicago Blackhawks. I'm a big fan of him, Richie. So, I mean, I have, you know, getting a little ahead of myself, I think the Hawks are ultimately going to win this series because I think, again, I think the depth for them at forward is good. And
you have the Hawks in six. I'm just reading our predictions.
I would be surprised if it's five, actually.
I
was going to go five because I think that, like, to me, the Minnesota Wild, I think they almost put everything into that St. Louis series. Like, I know that it only went to six games, but to me, I think to them, that was so big just to get to the second round for a second year in a row. And I think that series took a lot out of them. And I think Chicago Blackhawks right now, to me, look like the best team in either conference. I think Chicago Anaheim is a Western Conference final just waiting to happen.
It might be, and that'd be a great one. I actually, first off, have Brandon Saad second round.
You're higher on the Wild than I am.
Second round pick in 2011, actually from Pittsburgh. Yes, I am higher on the Wild. I have the Wild to win the series in seven. I feel that the goaltending in this series, I think Dubnyk's a little bit better than Crawford right now, although I think Dubnyk has been falling off a bit. The Wild do a tremendous job. They can roll their lines. They have good depth on defense. Their second pairing is rarely underrated. And I think Chicago has just a really good team as well. The coaching is tremendous. I know the Wild have lost the last 2 years to Chicago, but I think that's going to be a motivating factor to have them win in Game 7. Last night's game, not a great start. They show great character to come back. It's a tough loss, but I don't think they've had tough losses this year, and they've had tough stretches, and I think they're going to be able to deal with it.
Well, you think about the Chicago Blackhawks, Richie, and to me, their top-end talent is better than any other team's top-end talent.
Yeah.
But you look at that Nashville Predators series, they go down early in game 1-3-0. They also gave up leads in that series. They let the Predators come back. Game one against the Wild, they go up 3-0. They let the. To me, there's some cause for concern there. And to me, the defense, I mean, Duncan Keith has been unbelievable. Brent Seabrook's been solid. Kimmo Timonen, I think, you know, has been a little weaker there. And they've got Roosevelt playing with Duncan Keith. They've mixed it up a little bit. They've got Oduya back with Jarmuson. And so that's a little bit of cause for concern there. And the goaltending, as we mentioned, Corey Crawford comes out. Darling goes in, and then Crawford goes back in and wins game six. And so to me, that, you know, it's Chicago Blackhawks aren't playing flawless hockey right now.
No.
But to me, they have the ability with their players. They can. It doesn't matter if they're down one goals, two goals, three goals. They can come right back down the ice and score goals. And I think if Crawford starts to play a little bit better, I think this series could be done in five or six.
Well, you know, I think the interesting point, Ezzy, that you mentioned there, you talk about the Hawks being up 3-0 and you know, kind of having games going back and forth. But you mentioned that first game of Nashville-Chicago, and Nashville was up 3-0, and they blew it. They blew the 3-0 lead, and then they lost in overtime. Chicago showing that kind of championship will, being able to withstand the fact they blew a 3-goal lead and still win the game.
Well, that the trajectory of that series changes completely if Nashville wins that first game, right, in front of their fans and all that, and they let Chicago back in it, and it was incredible. I think the way Chicago, especially, you know, there was the triple OT game. Brent Seabrook got the winner. That was a fantastic series. And Nashville, I just don't think they have the firepower. I think, you know, you mentioned the depth of Minnesota, Richie, and, you know, really like the way Nito Niederreiter, he really turns up his game in the playoffs. He did last year against Colorado, and Thomas Vanek, they got him on the third line. Jason Zucker has been great there, got a goal last night.
Vanek made a nice pass to Zucker on that goal.
There's
nobody was around Vanek. That's why, because there's no contact.
No, but this is a great team. But I think, you know, the top end talent, like Marian Hossa, has been excellent with Jonathan Toews and Brandon Saad on the top line. And then you go up and down the lines, and Teravainen comes back into the lineup. And, you know, if Vermette, he's either in the lineup or out of the lineup, they have the ability to put in these veteran guys. So to me, it's going to be the games will be close. But I think ultimately, I'm really high on Chicago. I think. During the regular season, they kind of had these blips and these moments where you saw them kind of look like the team that won the Stanley Cup a couple years ago. And then you saw the Jets go in there and beat them, and everybody kind of thought, whoa, the Winnipeg Jets have gone into the United Center and beat the Hawks three times this year. This team's kind of not as good as it is. But as you know, the good teams really turn it up this time of year.
I still don't know how Dubik missed that goal, the fourth goal.
I don't know. It was he misplayed it.
But I just think this. I actually like this series for hockey watching perspective, because there's going to be goals, and maybe it's because they have a lot of depth, and maybe it's because their goaltending's terrible. I don't know, but I think it's going to be a fun series. You mentioned Ryan Suter's got to be better, Ezzy.
Yep,
got to be better. They need him. I know I like their defense, but he's got to be better going up against the big guns there, and of course, beyond the ice for the Kruger goal too is a factor.
You're talking about though, again, like Ryan Suter going up against that top line. I mean, this is the best. These are some of the best players in the world, right? So, and we saw that last night. And hey, the Wild. I'm not saying the Wild don't have a chance in the series, but I mean the Hawks right now. I think they're playing probably at a higher level than maybe any other team except for the Ducks.
It's been a great 3 hours. How quickly has it gone by? I want to thank our sponsors: Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Royal Sports, and Not Auto Corp. Our guest is Denny Potvin, Hall of Famer. Hall of Fame Islanders defenseman and Florida Panthers broadcaster Bruce Lupke, the voice of the Brandon Wheat Kings, who are headed to the final of the WHL, and Ted Kofin of the Detroit News to talk about Mike Babcock. Ezzy Ginsberg, putting together a hell of a show plan today, did a great job.
Next week,
3-6. Chris Curry, awesome job. 3-6 next week. We'll see you then. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Good the past two.